needed study in many respects on training up a child in the way he shall go. Now, I know that some of you don't have children, but an awful lot of you do. How many parents do we have that have children in this assembly that are not grown up? A great, great many, particularly down here in this area, in the main floor. And because of that, I do want to give it the attention that is due, and we won't go on for an awfully long time, but those that don't have, please don't count it as waste. Anytime you learn principles, it's worthwhile. And anytime that you can become a better counselor, it's worthwhile. And a better grandparent is worthwhile. And if you don't have children yet, you may have, so hide these words away in your heart. Starting out where I left off last week, it is very important that parents do more than just discipline, but that they praise their children when they do well. And I don't mean praise akin to how you praise God, bubbling in praise, but just words of appreciation. You know, everybody needs some words of appreciation. If the only time that your boss comes to ever say anything to you is just when the thing's wrong, you don't have the same kind of rapport and freedom with them. If every time the parents say something to the children, it's always with a view of correcting, pretty soon there's a big barrier that comes between them. And same with husband and wife. If he never compliments her, but only complains, and vice versa, there begins to build a feeling of either self-condemnation or not being loved. And one of the greatest needs in the world, in fact, I guess it's the greatest, is to be loved. That's a psychological need, is to be loved. And little children need love desperately. They're dependent upon the parents' love. One of the biggest factors studies have shown of children going out into hippieism, out into guruism, and to all these other things, is that they didn't feel loved by the parents. Didn't feel loved. And hunting for something, hunting for that fulfillment, hunting for love. So it's important that we praise them and not just find fault with them. It's important, you know, it's so easy to come down on them when they do something wrong. But we need to be very sensitive that we say things about them when things are right and good. When you're in a dating relationship, there's a lot of praise going on. Isn't that right? There's a lot of praise. That's the thing that causes them to fall in love. You know, people need love so much that if you love somebody with all of your heart, they can't help but love you back. In fact, this is the primary way that people fall in love. And particularly a woman. She might not be too particularly attracted to that man. But if he falls so much in love with her, he just can't stand it. He just wants her all the time. He has to be around her. He can't stand it. Many women cannot resist being loved to that extent. And they'll haul off and find themselves falling in love with him because they just need so desperately to be loved. They want somebody to really and truly adore them and love them. Little children need to be loved. They need to feel that love. They need to be hugged. Even when they get older, they need to be hugged. And they need to be commended. They need to be praised for their diligence. And if you praise for the patience. You see, but Johnny's not patient. He's hardly ever patient. I know that. That's why when he is, he needs to be praised for it. Because he seldom is. And so you're constantly having to, you know, try to correct and help him. And so it's so important that when he does do it right, that he gets praised. Otherwise, there isn't much incentive to do it right if he never hears anything good about what he does do. You know, if you go out and the folks here to mow the lawn and you spend hours and hours and you clip and do everything and you just do it, you can do a really a super job on the lawn and you get it done and you've clipped everything and you've done everything and you've worked for hours and then they come out and say, oh, you missed a spot right over there. And they walk in the house. You know how you feel. See? But they'd come out and just say, my, this looks grand. This is tremendous. I thought you even did this. Hey, this is terrific. Say, you know, get beams all over. And as you pass and say, oh, it looks like a little spot got missed. Would you hit that before you come in? That's easy to take now. Yeah, because you're feeling great. And it's the same way with children. We make an enormous mistake by just pointing out the faults all the time and not praising them. Many children are running away because they don't feel loved. They're running away more in this generation than they've ever run away. They're feeling loved less in this generation than they've ever felt loved. They get more things. You know, all these people saying, well, they just don't have the opportunity. I mean, you know, there's nothing for the kids to do. They just need to, let me tell you something. Whoa, hold the boat. Go back and look in the 30s and the 20s. How much was it to do? Not one-tenth of what they got to do today. They didn't have television. They didn't have radio. They didn't have button toys very much. They didn't have bicycles, most of them. They didn't have automobiles. They didn't have, most of them didn't even, a lot of them didn't even live in a city where there wasn't much to do. They couldn't afford a lot of things. And yet they kept their life full and busy. And they went all juvenile delinquents and running away from home because there wasn't enough to do. Kids have got more to do today, more contrivances and things than they've ever had in the history of man from the beginning of Adam to the present time. Take a trip. Around the world and down through Mexico and places like this and watch and look right by and see how much those kids got to do. And they're not all running away from home. And all delinquents. Praise them for showing their goods. For showing love. For standing up for Jesus Christ. For standing up for brother. For achievements. For a good job done. You see, there's teaching and praising. Very beneficial training and teaching. Because if brother tend to fight a bit, and you're having to correct, and then he stands up for brother, then if you commend him for that, that builds a positive attitude in him for working together. And then it makes them feel more like working together. Commending, has a higher motivation factor than condemning. You know that? That's right. People will do for praise much faster than they'll do, than they won't do because you ball them out. That's a general statement, but in general it's true. People will go for them. Out of love, out of praise, they'll do things for you. Well, otherwise, you can correct and correct. And, you know, they've been corrected, especially kids. They've been corrected and corrected and corrected, and they've always been corrected. So that's nothing new to them. They need to get praise as well. Reward for extra merit. It's good to reward for extra merit. That's a good principle. It's all right. But don't reward for usual duties. Don't reward them for taking the garbage out, picking the blocks up, picking the toys up, straightening the room. Those are normal duties that is to be expected. Every child should have duties. If you haven't got anything to do, find some. Because you're training children. There should be responsibilities that they can't learn responsibilities unless they're given responsibilities. Responsibilities should be no more than they're able to bear. They shouldn't be so long and tedious that they wear out before they get there. They should start with little tiny ones, even when they're little. Having them pick the blocks up, and they have to show them how at first, and having them do it. And they start out, you know, they went over and get one block, and they carry all the way over and drop the box, and go all the way over and get another block, and it's very inefficient at first. But teach them how, put the box in the middle, and get everything over to it. And all through life, keep the responsibility slightly growing as they grow and are able to handle it. And responsibility, they should fit in with the family and feel that to be a useful member of that family. Little daughter should do little things to help mother, even though it really isn't much of a help. She should be made to feel it's a help, and she should feel like that she's contributing to the family. It's important to train your children to feel they're contributing to the family. The boy should have a job helping dad do things, and help hold things what he saws out in the garage and various things, and make him feel like, and commend him for it. You know, you're a good holder. You held that nice and still the whole time. No big deal for Dad, but it's a big deal for little Johnny. He was wiggly, and in fact, he held that still for 5 minutes. It was a wonderful accomplishment for him. And he needs to be told so. It's important to him. You know, we don't do enough thinking. You agree? We don't do enough thinking. We just go on in life without really thinking. We are noted for talking without thinking and doing without thinking enough. We need to be more thinkers. We need to stop and consider the consequences. We need to stop and consider the advantages. We need to stop and say, what is the problem? And what can I do to solve the problem? Then take action to solve the problem. Take action to build. What do I want to build? And then take appropriate action that will build that. Do more thinking. Do more thinking. And this is one area. So they have normal jobs to do. Don't reward them for good doing a normal job. Then that makes them think that they've done something special, and then that isn't a normal job. They need to know it's a regular. They have a regular responsibility to the family, the same as mom and dad does. When they begin to realize they have a responsibility to the family, they begin to feel more a part of the family. You know, if you go in and you're working on the church with sage, you spend a lot of time putting up boards, you've been painting a lot or something, you feel more close to that. You feel more close to that than if you had nothing to do with it. You walk in, it's all bought and finished for you. You don't feel as close to it as if you've been working on it and you've been laying carpet or you've been painting, you've been putting up lights and so forth. You look up and you feel like you're part of it more, you see. And same with anything else that you do. And they need to feel a part of the family. Now, I said, do not reward them for usual duties. And do not reward them for being good. That's the responsibility. They are supposed to be good. Don't say, you've been awfully good, so here's a peppermint stick or here's a 50 cents. They should be good. They should be expected to be good. They should be expected to be good. And I was a little boy one time, my dad said something, and I said, what do I get if I do it? He says, it's not what you get if you do it, it's what you get if you don't do it. See? But allowances are good. Now, that's another matter. And whatever needs they have for spending at whatever age, you give them an allowance to take care of that. Don't cut the allowance if they're naughty. There are some exceptions, but I'll give those in a moment. But that's not a good principle in general. Because let's supposing the amount of allowance you give them will depend on your financial ability and what their needs are, and what they do with their allowance, whether it's all cream, you know, so to speak, is it all for just a pleasure, or for some of us to buy their school notebooks with and other necessities of life, and go to the basketball game or whatever. But if you give them X number of dollars a week or a month, depending on how old they are and so forth, and you keep chopping it down every time they do something wrong, they end up without enough money to live on all the time. A constant deficit. They're always being drugged down, and they can't buy the school the pencils and erasers and school the tablets, or they can't go to the game, or they can't do this. And they're constantly getting the deficits against their allowance. How would you like the boss to say, "Well, let's see now you dropped a pie in the bakery, so that'll be $2 off, and You came in late on Tuesday, so it'll be another $4 off, and you weren't funny enough this week, there'll be $4 deduction from that in your paycheck, and so on, they'll whittle you down, and well, here's $32.64 for the week." See? Well, you go home feeling really crummy. It wouldn't motivate you? Probably motivate you to quit. See? You can't keep whittling them down all the time on the allowances and constantly subtracting, and they need a certain amount. And if they don't need that amount, if you're going to whittle them down to this amount, they don't need that amount, what are you giving that amount for? And then when they are good, they get this big fat amount. What's that going to be? 75 licorice sticks and 14 popsicles? And what for? What are they going to use the money for? And so it should be amount that they need for reasonable living, and it shouldn't be chopped down. Now, there are exceptions. If the allowances are very large and they're just for pure luxury, and I don't think you should go too far on that. But if that's the case, then there may be some reason to cut some allowances because it's cutting some luxuries in life. But in general, it's not a good practice. And I'd say be careful, be really careful if you've got several children you have to be really careful about rewarding for extra merit. It's all right if you got one. Or it's all right if one of them is 9 years old and one of them is 4 years old. They do different things and they can't equate. But if they're fairly close together, you have to be really careful because they'll begin to accuse you of loving one more than the other. And they'll begin to feel unloved. Or they'll begin to, the one who's getting more, has most problems, and he's always getting rewarded. He's getting books, and he's getting, you know, little dog statues, and he's getting this, and he's getting that. And the other person's beginning to feel like, boy, I don't get anything. You know, he gets everything. Well, they really, and little kids will begin to decide. They're not good evaluators, you know. And they're emotionally affected. They'll begin to decide that you love them more than themselves. Particularly because they see the other person being a little better than they are. And they see themselves being a little more of a problem than them. And don't raise your hands, but some of you, you know, have you grown up feeling like you're the black sheep of the family? And you black sheep, have you felt like that maybe you were unloved? Now you know the answer, what the answer is. Well, be careful in your children. So you can't afford to be heaping up gold on this side and not on this side, because he's going to see the difference and feel unloved. He'll even wonder if he was adopted. That's true. You'll be surprised how many kids have gone through and checked out the baby book and sighed with relief to find out they were born in that family because they begin having feelings like this. Don't think the devil doesn't come to little kids too, as well as big souls, or mature souls. And so, you know, all children don't have the same ease to be good. And that may come as a revelation to you, but they really don't. Now, I'm not saying that every child doesn't have a female agent and have the ability to obey or disobey. They do. Everybody has an ability to say yes or no, to obey or not. But that is not all there is to the picture. One little kid, if you've had many children, you know the difference between children, right? Right? And it's not all environment either, right? And they're a little tiny, you begin to find the difference. One little kid, he'll start in, and he's so rambunctious, you can't hold him still. You have to put a leash on him. You have to nail one shoe to the floor and tie a knot in the shoe to hold him down, you know. They're all over the place. And that way, you want to go in circles, you know. But otherwise, but then in this children, he's more introverted, or he's more placid. And he didn't have to get anyone. The first kid, he just seemed like he spanked him to death, practically. The second kid, he didn't hardly have to have any. The first one, he's all over the map. He's in everything. The other one sits down and just plays right there. You know, there's a difference, right? And so that first child is going to have a more difficult time than the other one. He's going to get more spanking. He's going to have a more difficult time because he's more rambunctious. He's more curious. He's getting his fingers slapped a lot more than the other one. And it isn't just a matter of he's a free moral agent to say yes or no. His very innate curiosity and extra energy, and he may have a more vibrant, husky body. And that soul and that body full of energy, and the other may be a little more sickly or thin or so forth, and weak, more weak. He's more placid. And some just want to please real badly, and others have a very aggressive spirit. And every child will not be able to have the same ability to do extra things and be sweet and good and all forms of things you give them to do. And the ability to do different kinds of works you get to do. It depends on their talents and everything. And some will have just a knack for this and some won't. Some have a bent for it and some won't. And some will come right into it and the others won't. One will come right in and she'll be very domestic. And she'll do all these ironing and groceries and stuff. Just like Mama, she just loves to be like Mama. The other one, she just has a harder time with that. And so she's boxed more because she's very artistic and she's very musical and she's very high-strung, but she's got great creative abilities in these other areas and poetic and all of this, but her bent isn't towards, the kitchen sink and that type of thing. And so she's not going to be quite as easy and she's going to be a little more reticent in jumping right in to do those things. So everybody's got talents and abilities So if you begin to reward on that kind of basis, what's going to happen is it isn't going to be an incentive. Well, then he'll see that he gets more. The theories will tell you. Your mind will say, well, and so he'll rally, so he'll get more. Don't you believe it? You know, when you say, all right, the ones who get the best grades will get a scholarship, I usually am not too much for that type of thing. Because you say, well, that gives an incentive for everybody to work. No, it doesn't give incentive to everybody to work. It gets incentive for 5% of the people to work. The C student, the D student, the F student, they know good and well they're not going to get that scholarship. No, they didn't just get off the banana boat yesterday. No, and they've been around a little bit. They know better than that. They know they couldn't. They've been watching the papers, you know, F, D, so they know they're not going to rise up and get all the Una Silversmith downhill who just came in, you know, and he's snappy and sharp, and that's the name of a student that came into the school where I was when I was a boy. And this was a German Jew. And I still say that the history of the Jewish people show that when they forsook God, God left them with something to tell them to get along. You can take them out with nothing and shove them into a foreign nation in a short time while they're making a mint someplace down there on First Avenue. That's the truth. And I consider it a God-given ability to... And God has blessed him in that area. He's pushed him off, but he's left that with him. This kid was born in Germany and fled from Hitler to Holland, had to change languages. And he's a little boy. And then they began, invasion of Holland was imminent, so he changed countries to England. Now he had changed languages all over again. Went to school in England. And the imminent of Britain became imminent, and so they left on four ships to Jamaica. Three of them got submarines, one of them made it, and he was on the one down there. And they had to change schools and everything all over again. Then they switched him to New York. And then they switched him over here to Washington. And then in the fourth grade, he made all those switches to three nations, several nations and languages. That kid came in sharper in English, and sharper in math than anybody in the whole school. And he was just going like this. Now, he held a baseball bat this way, and he didn't know how to bat or anything like that. He wore short pants, and he had his accent, but... He outshone everybody else in the school all the way along. He was brilliant. Now, I would know better than to try to win a scholarship from him. There's just no way I'm going to do it. And I got good grades. What about those who are getting poor grades? So, you see, those children down there are not going to be motivated to outshine him. They say, well, I can't outshine him. I mean, he's this real sticky, sweet brother, and he's always doing everything, getting praised, and he's all this. I'm just a black sheep. I just can't stand. I just have trouble. I'm kind of argumentative in my spirit. I just have trouble. See, that isn't going to really motivate him. Your mind might say it will, but history will show you it won't. History will show you it won't. He's got to be made to feel that he's worth something, and he's loved. And he doesn't get the same grades. Johnny gets bragged on. Johnny gets bragged on because he gets big grades in math. And he gets big grades in English. And Susan gets big, you know, that type of thing. But he doesn't ever seem, he doesn't have any talents. So he doesn't get bragged on. But he's got talents, they're just not recognized. They're not one of the famous five. See? It's like Norman Rockwell, who's the artist that did all the Saturday Evening Post covers, you know, for years and years and years. And back in those days, in the 40s at least, he was getting $12,000 a cover. And when he was a little boy, his mother would nag at him. And she'd say, Norman, why don't you go out and get a job? And his dad would say, and do something worthwhile. Go out and get a job, you know, making $1 a day as a box boy or something. You're going to be worth nothing. You're sitting around drawing pictures all the time. You're not going to make anything out of yourself. You can't do anything doing that. Go out and get a job. Before long, he was head and shoulders above everybody else, money-wise, you see. He had a talent, but it wasn't being recognized. Somebody else is he's pulling down $300,000 or $400,000 a year as a baseball star or something. And said, oh, you go out and play baseball all the time. You're amounting nothing. You're no good. Get out and get a job down here. Get a paper route or something. Do something worthwhile, you know. Your brothers are getting A's and B's, and what are you getting? You're getting nothing down there. You got these low grades. He's not scholastic in his mind. He can't help it. He does have to go to school, and he does have to study. He's not sharp in his mind, but he can sure slug that ball, and he may pull down a great big fat salary someday that'll put everybody else to shame. So you have to recognize talent in your family where you find them, and just some talent is just, you know, some people are just sweet. They just have a personality that won't grade anybody wrong. They're easy to get along with. They're kind. They're warm. But nobody recognized it. It didn't show up in the report card. Hardly accepting down there as Susie is a real sweet girl to have in class. No grade for it, see? But there's value there. Yeah. There's value, but nobody recognizes. Not among the famous five up here. I have very serious objections to IQ tests. Because I claim that IQ tests do not give you intelligence quota at all. In fact, they're somewhat indicative, and no question about it, but they're not accurate at all. They are limited in talent, and they put a great amount of stress on education rather than intelligence. They ask you educational questions, memory questions. When did this happen in history, and what is this, and so forth. And it's pure learning, not intelligence. They're not really quotients of intelligence at all. Recognizing they do need some kind of standards, however, they need to do as best as they can, not knocking what they are trying to do. I'm just saying it's not accurate. So it's safer to treat all your children the same and to deny them if they disobey, because then they know they're wrong and they know they disobeyed, and so they do have to learn to obey. Even though it's more difficult for them to obey, they still have to learn to obey. So they understand the self-denial because they refuse to come in by 6 o'clock and weren't here for dinner time. See, they understand that. Avoid in your home the atmosphere of fear and confusion, permissiveness, warfare, indifference, uncertainty, double standards. If you see any of these things in your home, make sure that you clamp down on it. Don't allow indifference to home regulations or spiritual things. Don't allow any of these other uncertainties and various things in your home. Train and lead your family to work, to play, to worship, and discuss together. Have a well-balanced home. I think the parents should be involved in playing with their children. I don't mean all the time. Of course not. They should play most of the time by themselves. But there's some times that the mom, mother, or the father should be involved in the playing of the children. My father was a busy man, and yet he played with us children. He did things for us. I still remember we'd sit down, and he'd put a pillow beside him, and we'd come and we'd roll and go over top of his back and so forth. He'd take it in his legs, he'd flip the clothes and then his feet behind him as he laid on the floor, and the kids would all line up, you know, and we'd run around. And those play times were valuable times. He'd take an old lawnmower handle, and in time of depression, didn't have a lot of money, didn't go out and buy all these things. Took an old lawnmower handle and he'd chain it to a limb, and you'd use that to swing this way or get up on your knees on it, and this, and he'd take a tire and chain it to another one, three, you know, and he'd do things with it with the children, and this built a rapport. It wasn't just come here and get your spanking, but not want to go out fishing with them, but there were times to play with the children. And yet most of the time we were on our own, but there was enough time there that it built a relationship, and some fathers particularly don't take time for the children. The children go up saying, well, I don't even know my dad. Well, I never really knew him. That's a shame. That's a shame. You never really knew your father. Fathers, wake up. Wake up. You know what your problem is? Selfishness. Selfishness. All wrapped up in dad and what dad can do with mom, but not for the children. They're your children, dad. They've got your name and your seat in them. They look to dad, and dad's a hero. And be sure you're a known hero. That's right. My folks used to, if it's all right to tell this story, your family people here, okay? My dad used to give his children a bath, and we were little kids. And you get in tub, and my mother would put, we had four of us. It was a kind of mass production. He put one in, he'd bathe, and then the other one would go in and bathe him, and one after another, see. And he used to pile up, so remember, soap bubbles. You know, he puts in here, on here, now be quiet, now get him out, you know, see. But he'd take time to, you know, to make it a little bit enjoyable for us, see. I think that's important. I took time to tell my children stories and play with them and made games. I had them draw. I had them down on the table, and I sometimes said, "Okay, now we're gonna draw. We're gonna draw boys swimming, for example." And make an example, because I still remember each of my children have a scrapbook of all their pictures. And they weren't all artists, but they've got scrapbooks. And I said, "Okay, now first we draw the hair, and then you draw it like mine, and just draw that. Now can we put the eye over here and so forth, and about that big, and then I expect we needed, and so forth." And they all go. I did one step at a time. They just copy one step at a time, and they begin to put out good pictures. And I would take time with them, and we would design different things together. As they got older, we'd design things. I'd design things with the boys and on paper, and I'd make games, and we'd play them together, and I'd do things with them, you know. make very complicated hopscotches for them, and we go in. They love it because Dad was doing it with them, see. And we did a lot of things together. I tell them stories. So my wife says, you know, honey, stories are supposed to be before they get sleepy. But she said, you're telling me to make them so exciting that they stay up and they never get sleepy. You know? But they loved it. They still remember all those times, you see. Now, if you're not taking time with your children, you better do it. Lest you wake up someday standing beside them in court saying, Judge, where did I fail? See? So many parents can't see where they failed. Fill their lives with godliness and faith and Christian philosophy. By Christian philosophy, I mean constantly be, see, filio means love and sophia is wisdom. Philosophia, philosophy, the love of wisdom. Fill them with God's wisdom. That means all the time things happening when, well, you see, honey, because so-and-so and so-and-so. Well, this is wonderful because God so-and-so. My father, we get in the car, no matter what, we go out for a trip. No, they weren't busy highways in those days. But he'd always pray that God's protection on us as we go out. He'd cut himself. You got to somebody cut himself. And he'd say, now, Lord, don't let this finger get infected and so forth. Thank you in Jesus' name. And less little kids sitting up in their eyes looking at him. We were watching him practice godliness. And all of our life, we would practice him watching things that were good. I remember I went out. I won't tell you what I was doing because I don't want to implicate the person, but I was in high school, and I'd been growing up under Christian parents. And this person I went out with was a Christian, but he kind of backslid a bit. He backslid. And I went out with him, and he had a flat tire. So he got out, and the tire was worn out. Should have replaced it 8 years ago. And he swore when he saw his flat tire. And I still remember saying, well, and instead of swearing, you ought to be thankful that there's so much... that you use that tire so, you know, got so many miles out of it. He's worn practically down to nothing, see? And I wasn't trying to correct him, but I had grown up under one influence, and that all was so negative, to curse a tire for going flat that was already bald and worn out twice, you know? And I didn't have that kind of, I didn't grow up under a cursing parent that was, every time something went wrong, they cursed, see? And that'd be normal to a child growing up that way. He'd do the same thing. Some of the language these young kids and girls use are absolutely four-letter words and just absolutely astounding. 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, they cuss like the, you know, I hate to use the word because it's unfair to the sailors, but, you know. Sailors aren't all that way. But some of these kids, you know, they grew up that way. Teach them to have good, proper attitudes. Right? Godliness. Instill godliness in them. Don't leave it up to the Sunday school department in the school. That's your job as well. Proverbs 29:15, if you will, please. The rod and the reproof. Did you notice there's two? Not just the rod, there's also the reproof. The rod and the reproof give wisdom. But a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. The one left to himself. They're allowed to roam. They're all over the neighborhood. You never know where they're at. And they're not where they say they are. And they're all over the countryside. Gone half the time. And the house, this is like, it just seemed to be a stopping point. You know, it's, come in, the door knocks. Where's Johnny? Well, I don't know where he is. I think maybe he might be out playing basketball. I'm not quite sure. Where's Paul? Oh, I don't know. He hasn't got home yet. Well, when will the father be home? Well, I don't know. I think he's got an engagement tonight. He may be so forth. We're going to be home this evening so we can come. Well, I don't know. I better do this. And the guy's got a bridge club at 6, and I got a meeting at 7. I'm going to be this. And everybody comes in, and he comes in. Hey, dinner ready. I got to leave here in about 10, 15 minutes. And so-and-so. And, well, hurry, get my coat ready and get that ironed. And at the house is like Grand Central Station. See, if everybody is passing through, and here comes the 440 train. Get out of the way. And it comes through. And see him. And everybody's coming in. And the house just seems to be a collection point for people to come in, throw their hats off, change their clothes off. You don't know if it's a boarding house or a family, see? But there needs to be time around the the family altar, around the family fireplace, as it were, where my dad used to sit down and play his mandolin and his things so forth. Take some time with your family. Have some time. Now, you don't need all the time, great, enormous blocks of time, but there's got to be some times that they feel together, because those are wonderful times. And when it's a special occasion. I used to love it when my father and mother would decide to play games. My father especially would. And we'd say, Dad, would you play this game with us and so forth? And occasionally, he would say, okay. And he'd play with us the game evening. And I thought that was the biggest privilege to have Dad play with us. You know, that was worth so much. I just felt so elated inside. I still remember how I felt. And I just wanted him to win, and I just wanted everything to be, you know, I just was so happy to have him. I just felt super elated the whole time. Every time Dad would play a game with us. Now, see, if Dad doesn't play too often, but he plays occasionally, that builds good feelings towards Dad and having Dad with you, see. And he did a lot of other things, didn't play games an awful lot, but he did on occasion with us. And my mother played games with us on occasion with us. And it helps. Train for the future. See, because it says otherwise he bringeth his mother to shame if he left for himself. Train for the future. Change and church too. Chapter 22 and verse 15. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Now, it did not say childlessness is bound in the heart of a child, drive it from him. He's a child, and he needs to be allowed to act as a child. Some people, you know, they go up to that little kid and say, you're acting like a baby. Mother says, well, honey, he is a baby. He's only two, you know, see. And then we forget. Can you remember back when you was 4 and 5 years old and 6 at times? Can you remember how sensitive you were? How shy you were? How, you know, little things became big things to you? How scared you were of things? You know how you needed security? You know how that bully threatens you and this thing? And you know how scared you were to go home from school the first day? You know, all that type of thing? They're little people, and they just, you know, they have fears, and things look big and to them, and they need people to look after them and realize they're little. You know how that, I was walking one day along by a store, and there was down Palm Springs, and there was a mother and a father and little boy. And they walked along, and there was a fire truck with that long in the window. And here they see me walking along, and the boy and sister and the chick was going like this, and he was staring at that fire truck. And they kept going along and put out of the corner. They didn't even know he was gone. And he didn't even know where they were. He was just staring at that fire truck in the window. So his eyes big like this. And they finally just looked and looked back. No, he was staring at that fire truck. That thing was so big and important to him. And come on, what are you doing back there, see? And, you know, it's so easy to say, you know, come on, what are you, you know, all that old thing. But to them, that little paper cardboard put together so flimsily, to them, it's, you know, have you ever had that? Remember that thing you had back there that was so important to you? That little thing you had you thought was the greatest thing alive? My father bought me a chocolate Easter bunny one time. And it was fairly solid, though. They didn't learn how to make them real thin like you do today and, you know, put all that shiny coat on them. I thought that was the greatest thing going, you know. I mean, I thought that was so tremendous. I remember telling you about these little maple sugar candies. And little nibbles and put it back in the box, you know, and all this. But that thing was tremendous, you know. And you forget sometimes, if you don't go back and project yourself back and realize their little lives are important to them and things are important to them. And if you take care of them and watch out for them all their life, they're going to be different children than if you're watching out for you. Just make sure you don't get in my way. Keep out of my way. Dad, I'm busy, see? You got to make sure that they're integrated into the family life and you care for their souls. And they know. They can tell whether you care for them or whether you don't. Avoid embarrassing children. A lot of parents are very careless in this. And teachers, too. Because they get corrected so much, they go, oh, he's a little kid. But you know, little kids can get terribly embarrassed. Do you remember back when you got embarrassed when you were little? Remember that? I do. And one time my grandmother came, or my aunt came, and she had all these little knives, shiny, different colored ones, little colored knives on chain. And I came running in the house and playing. I said, oh, come over here. And she said, oh, I've got something for you. She holds out her hand. There's about 5 knives with 5 chains running through her hand. She holds them out and says, here. I grabbed all of them and said, thank you, see? And she said, oh, no, just take one. Now, see, it was her fault because she didn't realize that little children don't have real sharp critical acumen. She never said, choose one. She She assumed that I was thinking like an older person. She said, heal. I don't stop to think about how much money they got, how much they cost, how would they do, what's reasonable. What would I want with five knives? I had the slightest idea. She just said, heal. See? I took all five. She never made any stipulations. Little kids just go by straight, you know, just by what you say. They don't stop to consider, you know, evaluate all these things. They're not evaluating in life. And I put them back. And I said, oh, okay. And I was more than happy to take one. One meant much to me as five. I just wasn't thinking. But I remember how ashamed I was. I remember how terribly ashamed I was. I didn't know it until they told me. Then I realized how unreasonable I was. I didn't even realize how unreasonable I wasn't thinking. Well, some of older people not noted for thinking too much either. That's how they've been bringing their families up the way they have. So remember, when they're little, they're going to do less thinking. I remember how ashamed I was. Remember how ashamed I was when I got brought a friend home from school one day. And my mother was making some cocoa from us. And he was sitting against the wall over by the wood stove. And I was sitting there, and I was talking. I was just talking away like the kids would come home from school. And I forgot he was there because he was down behind the wood stove or beside it. And I didn't see him. And I forgot I brought him home, if you can imagine such a thing. I was in the first grade. I still remember it to this day. And I went on, I said, Gary was naughty in school today. He got a spanking from the teacher. And my mother says, well, honey, Gary is sitting right down there. And I remember the shame that came over. Then I tried to cover up. And you know how wise little kids are when they cover up? And I said, oh, but Gary got an A in school today, and I only got a B. See, I was trying to cover up. See, only thing I knew to do to cover up. But little people can get ashamed just like bigger people can get ashamed. And so be careful with them. And don't shame them in front of everybody else. Treat them like real souls and people. You can hurt them by, they're pretty tough. They rebound. But years and years of whooping on a certain that way can have no effect in them. They can become introverted, feel unloved, feel down, feel worthless, feel hopeless, like, you know, that type of thing. Because the parents did not realize. I've had parents once saying, I wish I knew 4 years ago what I know now. But after I now had this experience, I've come to realize, and I've heard these lectures and classes, and when I'm bringing out here in Christian schools and other things, if I just knew those things, because I ruined my child, and I didn't know it. I just didn't understand what I was doing. I didn't understand this type of thing. And now if I could only go back and do it over again, because the child feels like life is hopeless and I'm a bad egg, and so, you know, no use even trying, because I'm just a bad guy. There's no hope for me. I can't make it. The parent was at fault. Should never let him feel like a bad guy. See, well, he didn't tell me that. No, he won't tell you. It's up to you to be super sensitive. And be careful what you do that it will not possibly instill such a concept in them. Avoid ridicule. Don't ridicule. Don't find some little thing, you know, and don't say, hey, chub, Camille, say. Don't say things like that. He's already sensitive to the fact that he's chubby. He can't help it. You're the one that's feeding him. And he's the one who got that, you know, certain metabolism and so forth. It's not his fault. Don't call him names like that. It can be very sensitive. Avoid threats. You know, kids like that are overly thin, overly tall, overly short, overly fat, problems with speech impediments, physical, you know, flyaway ears, or with no chins and so forth. They have enough trouble against the world and little kids that are very blunt, you know, your nose is too big, that type of thing. They have enough trouble without dad and mom. They just need to reinforce them all that they can. Avoid paddling for everything, too. Some people, all they know is the paddle. Oh, get the paddle. Everything's the paddle. Every little thing is get the paddle. You know there are all other ways to appeal to people besides the paddle? You know that? And first thing, appeal. Appeal to the sense of wanting to do right. Now, I know that at some ages, and particularly, you know, like when they're 2 and 3 years old, they do not have a lot of sense at that age of wanting to please and do right. But, you know, it's so easy to say, well, they don't have any desire to want to do right. So, you know why? You've never instilled it in them. You've never bragged at them they've done right. All you've done is beat them when they've done wrong. So they've never learned that is a real virtue. They have never been taught and felt the joy of being, see, of doing something and feeling good and esteemed by it. And so they need to appeal to the sense, especially if you're a little bit older, to the sense of rightness and wanting to do good. Instill principles that they want to do good out in life. Not just say, see, if you just beat them to do wrong, sure they may line up. So I got them lined up. My kids, boy, I tell you, I did my family right. See, I got my kids. Let me show you how this. Susan, see that? 2.3 seconds. See? Listen to Ben. Johnny! See? I got them lined up. Sit down. See? Stand up. Sit down. Sit down. I got my family. I mean, they never disobey me. Total failure. Total failure. He has learned he will not go out. He will not go out and do things that he's going to get caught at and put in jail because of his fear of that type of thing. But he's only learned to feel punishment. And when he gets out someplace and there's not a soul looking, and he figures there's not going to be any punishment because no one will know, he has no motivation to do right for rightness' sake, only to escape punishment, and there's nothing stopping him from reaching forth his hand to do what's wrong, because he figures there's no punishment here. You have not built a righteous spirit in him, only a fear of hell, of punishment. And see, that's not enough, and that's not right. There should be positive things in him. He should not do things for positive reasons, not just to escape negative things, you see. Amen? Aren't you glad you don't have a religion of just feel? You have to do all these things or God will have judgment on you? There are religions around the world that way. There's no joy, there's no peace, there's just fear of divine vengeance. And they do tremendous sacrifices, but they're unhappy people all the days of their life. There's never any joy. And there's not the positive, there's no righteousness. Fivefold balance in your home. Make sure the children get proper food. You see, is that necessary to say? Yes. Some of these kids come to school without any breakfast. They come and they eat their cake, and that's all they eat for lunch. And they're not balanced. And I'm not a food fattest, but I think that there should be a balance. Make sure they're getting plenty of protein, and make sure that they're getting the vitamins and the minerals and the proper food, the proper balances, vegetables and fruits. And so don't let them just be a cakes eater all their life. They need food that will carry them through the day. If they have constant carbohydrates all day long, sugar food, and there's no staying power, they need good protein, you know, milk and eggs and meat and things that will give long-term energy so they're not nervous. And, you know, kids can be nervous, and if they lack iron, they lack protein, they lack things. They can be nervous. They can be fidgety. They can run out of energy and be cranky and all of this. Make sure that they're eating right, and don't let them overeat and stuff themselves and get gain weight and gain weight and gain weight and gain weight. I mean, stop and look. They're your children. Help them out. And if they're too thin, don't just let them go on the way skipping meals because they're not hungry. Get in and find out what's wrong and try to build them up. They're your children. Be a good pastor to them. Proper food, rest, play, work, and worship. Those five things. Balance. Don't let them get away without work. All play and no work. Or make them do all work and no play. Get a balance in there. And don't harass or pick on a child. If you're constantly picking on that child, you're building something that's bad. You better get in and find another way to take care of it. Be a friend to them. And get out of the picking on them business and start helping. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1 says, no, that's the one I want. It's, I'll find it in a minute. Oh, yeah, Ephesians, yes. From Galatians. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. This is a favorite verse among parents, Christian parents. They like to read it to their children, and they should read it to the children. But in verse 4, they skip that somehow. They never read the children that. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. That means by arbitrary, harsh, unbearable demands, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. You notice he said, not just make them obey you, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. What does that mean? Nurture is feeding, to nurture them. Bring them up, feed them in the Lord. Not only feed them in the Lord, but admonish them. Feed and admonish, see? But don't harass. Don't put more pressure on them than they're able to bear, so that they collapse, give up, quit. Don't give them such heavy assignments. All right, for that, you're not going to go to a game for 6 months. And for that, you're not going to be able to play for 2 weeks. That's more than they can bear. All right, you're going to work for 4 hours of lessons. I mean, they can't handle that. That's absolutely and totally unreasonable. If somebody told you, all right, you did wrong, so you're going to run from here to Olympia without stopping. I mean, see, that's too much. You give up before you start. It has to be commensurate with your abilities. Lead them into a personal commitment to Jesus. Very important. And keep that commitment. Don't be satisfied with the fact that you gave the heart to Jesus and filled the Holy Ghost when he was 5 years old. Keep them up all the time, fresh in Jesus. Do you know why? Many times when girls get pregnant, 16, 17, 18 years old, and they are coming before the counselor, do you know what the answer they give over and over again? You say, well, how can you let those boys just use you sexually? You know all those boys out there in the school want. I mean, they're not in love with you. You know all they want is sex. Why did you do that for? Well, they told me that they love me. Well, at least they told me that they love me. At least they got hugged and kissed and told that I was loved. Over and over and over again. Girls have told the same story. No, I didn't particularly enjoy it, but at least they were loving. I felt loved. And they see the television and movies today, they equate sex and love together. They call it making love instead of making lust. See? And they equate it that way, and so if she can feel like she's being loved, that's so strong is that need to be loved, that she'll give herself to him, she can just feel hugged and kissed and said she's loved. Parents, wake up. Has everybody left me? Show them love. Tell it to them. And show it to them. Now, I got two more. It's up to you. But it's my job to deliver my soul as a pastor to help you in that which is Christian living. This is part of Christian living. This is not just, well, it's not Bible. It is Bible. It's the extension and the part of Christian living. If you look at the life of Jesus Christ, he didn't just read Old Testament scriptures. He said the kingdom of God is like a field. And he got all these parables of real life situations, didn't he? And this is part of a Christian life, a Christian church, a Christian home, and a Christian school, and in the future for them. And the salvation of the souls in many cases. Watch out for rock music in the church. And watch out for fast music. A lot of fast music. Just, you know, studies have shown that fast music, don't ever have fast music on when the doctor's operating on you. You know what I mean? Fast music, you know, it keeps something going inside, and it's not a soothing, relaxing thing. In this age when there's beep, 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 boom, 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 you know, clam, 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 rattle, 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 hawking whales. This is a busy lot, you know, with the nervous age, everybody's done a stress, you know, walking around. Stress is a fantastic pressure on this whole age. But a lot of fast music all day is just pumping it up, they're keeping it going. If anything, they need soothing music. And with all the flesh drawing, how about something that would draw the spirit? And so watch out for fast music. I don't mean that an occasional fast music, I don't know what it would be, but if it's decent music, I'm not saying anything wrong with fast music. But I mean just a constant barrage of fast music is dynamite. You don't want it. Melancholy music. Some of you have a bent for melancholy music. Watch out for a lot of melancholy music. That's my advice. Melancholy music, you know what it does? It makes you melancholy. And melancholy is not a good state to be in. It is a self-pity state, you know. And these songs, you know, and they lost my dog, and I lost my wife, and I lost my kids, and I lost my insanity, you know. No, woe is me. See, all those kind of songs, they're just downing songs, you know. That's right. Oh, I know there's a little bit of appeal to some of that. I know there's a little bit of appeal. And I'm not hitting anybody that has a little bit of bent for bluegrass music or hill music or western music, cowboy music. I'm not hitting that at all. You have a right to your taste. I'm not saying that they're wrong or anything else. I'm just saying that a lot of melancholy music tends to make the soul melancholy, which is a form of self-pity, which is different than praise and glory and joy and happiness and faith and other type of thing. And it's not good for you. A lot of people relish, you know, in self-pity, but it's not good for you. And worldly music that has a worldly philosophies in it and worldly lifestyles in it. Watch out for that for your children. Don't let them play that stuff that has worldly philosophy and stuff. They're getting hooked on it. They're getting bent that way. You're teaching them. You're training them. You're undoing everything else that you're doing. Wake up and realize those things do have impact. And now, to hit rock music again real quickly, here is this is still not what I wanted, but I guess we'll get by with it, maybe. No, there was about 26 things in the list that they would check out right or wrong. That lab tests have shown in research that rock and roll music produces a lot of physiological and destructive damage, impact. I want to read that to you. Also, I'm going to read you some things about some lab tests in this book here called The Early Window, Effects of Television and Children's Music. It's not a Christian publication. And it goes in-depth with studies of several hundred children. They haven't watched a program of somebody, beating up dolls and punching them and a lot of violence. And then they have children watch something else that's just